I'm John Krall. We've got a special No Limits today. We're broadcasting live from the Great Indiana State Fair. If you don't get a hankering for hot buttered corn on the cob while you're listening today, well, I'm just not doing my job right. My guests are Cindy Hoy, Executive Director of the Indiana State Fair Commission, Stephanie DeCamp, Director of Indiana State Fair Ag Ed, and Randy Crone, President of the Indiana Farm Bureau. We're not going to be able to take calls today, but we hope you'll enjoy the conversation and participate via social media. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits at WFYI and on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are broadcasting live today from the Indiana State Fair. If you want to come out and see us, we are just across from the Coliseum. We're over by the ping pong tables. There's some cornhole going on here, you know, and I can smell the corn dogs and the corn on the cob, which, by the way, is something that's going to happen for me after we get off the air. We'd love for you to come by, say hi, maybe join us on the air for the conversation. We're going to be talking with some very special guests today, starting with Randy Crone. He is the president of the Indiana Farm Bureau. Later, I'll be joined by Cindy Hoy, who's executive director of the Indiana State Fair Commission, and Stephanie DeCamp, who is director of Indiana State Fair Ag Ed. And we may have some surprise guests along the way. So, Randy, welcome to the program. It's good to have you here.
Great to be here. I can't think of a better place than to be.
Particularly for the Farm Bureau.
Yeah,
absolutely. This is pretty much, as to use one of my grandfather's old expressions, it's got to be hog heaven for you.
It sure is. It's a showcase of agriculture around here, and we've got a lot to be proud of.
So let's talk a little bit about that. Why? How important are, is not just the state fair, but all of the county fairs, the, you know, in addition to being, you know, one of the things that make Indiana, Indiana, the fairs are particularly important for folks in your line of work, right?
Absolutely. I think it lets us showcase what agriculture does. You know, you think about people being so removed from how their food's produced, and they're able to come out here to the fair, see a lot of the young adults with the 4-H projects, their hard work and what they've done. You can see the livestock out here, and they put a lot of time, a lot of effort in here, and I think you can see the passion that they put into these projects and this livestock, the animals, and it just helps people around the community to understand what we do.
And I should emphasize that because we are here, we're not able to take phone calls today or emails, but if you want to join the conversation, as a listener named Marion has done, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, as Marion did, or on Twitter at WFYI. Marion writes, an increasing number of us boycott state and county fairs for promoting the continued relentless expansion of livestock production in the name of feeding the world and economic development, despite the fact that of all the food we eat, our meat, poultry, and dairy products are by far the most resource-intensive and environmentally damaging to produce. Legal but cruel factory farming practices treat animals as commodities. The state fair is a cruel facade for an industry that exploits the farmers and is ecologically, economically, and ethically unsustainable. We need to heal our unjust and cruel food production system, not glorify and promote it.
Okay, there was a lot there. I guess I travel the state, and I see we farm ourselves in the southwest part of the state, around Evansville. But I have a lot of friends that raise livestock, and I would challenge you to come out on their farms and see what they really do. They care about their animals. They take care of them. They're in an environmentally safe, friendly, temperature-controlled environment. There's a lot of things that you said there, but I would question a lot of them.
Yeah,
I think we live in a
we
live in a country where we have a lot of choices, and you know, if you don't want to eat meat, fine, but don't keep us that would like to have a nice pork chop here at the fair like I did a while ago from having that choice. But As far as the animal control, or how we take care of our animals, we do a great job. I'll showcase that. I'll put it up against anybody on what we do, how the farmers do. They're great stewards of the land. They're great stewards of the animals, and they're unmatched in what we do here in Indiana.
So we were talking before we got the Facebook message about this. Is this pretty much the Super Bowl for the Farm Bureau? Is this the big event?
This is very important to Indiana Farm Bureau. Really, it's very important to Indiana agriculture, because as you walk around the fair, you can go to Pioneer Village and you can see the way things were done, 50, 60, 70 years ago. But you just walk a little farther and you can see all the new equipment and all the new technology. And I think people, if you've been removed from the farm for a generation or two, you'd be surprised how agriculture has changed. In my 30-some years of being on the farm, the way we've raised our row crops now compared to what are back 30 mm-hmm. years ago to now, things have really, really changed. And I call it prescription farming, because we'll go out on our farm, we soil sample every acre, and we know exactly what nutrients and what its capabilities are. And then so we'll put the inputs just what it needs to maximize the crop that we can get there. We're not going to over-fertilize, because, one, it's bad for the environment. Two, it's bad for our pocketbook. But we will prescription farm every acre that's out there in our field. So
how has the
lot different.
How has the growth of the the whole farm-to-table movement and the locally grown stuff changed the way farmers have to operate? Has it made it easier or harder?
I don't think it's changed a lot. It just has some other opportunities. There's ones that want to do the from the farm to the plate. That's great. There's others that maybe don't want to pay that extra premium for those products. And so we have to have a smorgasbord of choices out there. So it's given some farmers opportunities, new opportunities, especially some of the younger generation, because we struggle in bringing the next generation back to the farm. And so there's opportunities out there with that. But I think when you look around, just Indiana farmers do a great job. I hold my head high, and I guarantee you all farmers do, because of what they do and what they produce.
If you are just joining us, we are broadcasting live from the Indiana State Fair. We are right across from the Coliseum, right next to the ping pong tables. We're under a tent here, and anyone who wants to come by, if you have a question, I'm talking right now with Randy Crone. He's the president of the Indiana Farm Bureau. There are going to be other people here. If you just want to come and talk about what the State Fair means to you, please feel free to drop by the tent. You cannot call us today for technological reasons, but you can join the conversation via social media. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. So, Randy, when people come here to the State Fair, because as you say, this is sort of a chance for you to showcase what you do, what is it you hope they get out of the experience?
I would hope they just learn a little bit about agriculture, but also, the 4-H project's great. Mm-hmm. That's a great program right there. I would hope they'd walk through the 4-H exhibits and see what the young adults have done, the time and the effort and the pride that they've put in there. Then as you look at Pioneer Village and see where agriculture's been, 50, 75 years ago, then you move to the newer equipment, I would like them to learn a little about the technology and your Facebook message you had there. Mm-hmm. I think if you were out on a farm, you were here and you understood and seen a little bit, maybe you'd have a little different perception of what we do, because I live on our farm every day and mm-hmm. my wife and our children are raised there. We're not going to do anything to harm the ground we make our living from the ground. So we're not going to do anything that would harm it or cause problems. And I think people need to understand that. I understand fear sells pretty easy, mm-hmm. But we got to stay fact-based here and make sure we know what we're doing and understand. But just traveling, if you look on the other side here close by us, we've got the livestock, mm-hmm. Whether that's the hogs or the cattle or llamas. But to walk through there, I would challenge them to talk to some of the children, some of the young adults that have been in there, about what they've learned from raising their animals and, one, the pride they've taken, but the responsibility that they've learned. That's every day. They have to be fed, watered, take care of. So I think the young adults learn a lot from this fair, and how to be responsible adults when they grow up.
So you mentioned a couple of times that going to Pioneer Village, seeing how things were done and how much differently they're done now. Can you talk about some of those changes, the changes in agriculture, just in your lifetime? I mean,
I've been farming a little over 30 years, and we're a row crop. We grow white corn, yellow corn, soybeans, wheat, and so that's considered row crops. And I look at the technology change, just the GPS, the auto steer. Our planter now is set up that we plant different populations all across. The number of seeds we plant per acre is different all across the whole farm, because that way we're planting the right amount for that soil type. So it's, boy, I don't know, it's hard to explain. You almost need to ride in a tractor and experience, but there will be two or three computers in our tractor when we're planting. And so it's, you know, it's not my grandpa's farm, it's not my dad's farm, and it's almost not mine, because in 30 years, the way it's changed. But you'll see an iPad in there, maybe two, another computer screen, but you're doing auto steer, you're doing precision planning according to every acre out there.
So is this, when you come here, is this a little bit like a busman's holiday for you?
Yeah.
I mean, since you live
Hey, it's a great experience, and I'd encourage everybody to come out and just see the fair. But just to learn, to me, it's about learning a little bit about agriculture and understanding what we do and why we do it. And it's real people with families, and I guarantee you they're great stewards of the land.
We are joined now by Stephanie DeCamp, who is director of Indiana State Fair Ag Ed. Stephanie, welcome to the program.
Welcome. Or thank you.
It's good to have you here. And I should say to all of our listeners, we are live here at the Indiana State Fair. We're just across from the Coliseum, over by the ping pong tables and some cornhole. Not far. I can smell the corn dogs and the corn on the cob, making me really, really hungry right now. So please come out if you're here at State Fair and happen to be listening to this. Please come by and say hi. You can join the conversation if you would like. So I asked this question of Randy, Stephanie. Is this for those of you who care about agriculture, you know, as not just a part of the economy, but also a lifestyle and a chance to teach people about it, is this pretty much the Super Bowl for you?
I would say so. I mean, coming from an extension background prior to coming to the state fairgrounds, as the director of education, it's a passion, and we are excited to showcase it every year for 17 days. And if it was up to me, we'd do a few more of these just so that we can continue to showcase. It's fun.
Do the state fair? You'd extend it? Well, I know my children would be thrilled with that, but I'm not sure your labor force would be.
No,
I suspect those folks are pretty tired by the time the whole thing ends. Well, I asked Randy at the time, what do you hope that people who come here get out of the experience of going to the state fair?
Well, everybody comes for the food. I mean, everybody's standing in line for food. And we do know that every bite of food we take has a story. And we hope they learn a little bit about that story through the programming that's happening throughout the fairgrounds. There is some kind of educational touch point or exhibit every turn of the fairgrounds. So it's very exciting that they can get that information.
Gotten a question via Twitter from a listener named Ryan. And if you want to reach out to us via Twitter, you can find us at WFYI. Ryan writes, quick question, are some of the techniques used in the Pioneer Village at risk of extinction?
To me.
Okay, we'll go with that. Randy.
I think it's like anything. Everything evolves, and agriculture has changed a lot in the last 50 years. And it's a lot rapid. The change is a lot more rapid than it was a few years ago. Is it going to be extinct? There's a few people that will probably be doing those things, but I don't think we'll have the ability to produce food for all the people around the world using techniques that were used 50 years ago.
What do you find when you go to the Pioneer Village? What is the thing that speaks to you the most?
It's just a lot of history and seeing. I mean, back 50, 75 years ago, it was mostly manpower that did a lot of the farming. Now, when you look at, you walk right next door and all the nice green or whatever, red, blue paint, whatever you want to, whichever color you want to use. But just all the equipment there, just unbelievable what you can get done, what one person can get done in a day compared to what you could 50 years ago.
We are broadcasting live from the Indiana State Fair. We are just across the way from the Coliseum, right next to the ping pong tables. There's some cornhole going on here. We're under a lovely tent. And we would love to have you, if you are out here at the fair, come by and join us, say hi. If you've got a question about the fair or about agriculture in general, we've got the folks on who can answer it. I've been talking with Randy Crone. He is the president of the Indiana Farm Bureau. And Stephanie DeCamp, who's director of the Indiana State Fair Ag Ed, just joined us. We're joined later by Cindy Hoy, who's executive director of the Indiana State Fair Commission. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits, live from the Indiana State Fair. Please, please, stay with us.
No Limits is made possible on 90.1 WFYI by your membership and by Agrinovus Indiana, dedicated to fostering innovation in the food and agriculture industry. More at agrinovusindiana.com. Agrinovus Indiana, innovation for life, grown here. I'm Matt Pelster. Another sunny day in central Indiana. A great day to be at the fair. We'll get up to 85 this afternoon. Expect partly cloudy skies tonight. Overnight lows in the mid-60s. Tomorrow, a 50-50 chance for rain late morning. High 83.
On the next On Being, singer-songwriter Craig Minowa of the orchestral indie rock collective Cloud Cult.
We are really blessed as a band because our supporters are seekers. They come to shows with the masks down and with their hearts on the outside.
I'm Krista Tippett. Please join us.
Tonight at 9, here on 90.1 WFYI.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are broadcasting live today from the Indiana State Fair. It's an absolutely beautiful day out here. We're under a tent just across the way from the Coliseum. See some folks playing ping pong right by us. There were folks playing cornhole a little while ago, but they've moved on. We talked just a little while ago with Randy Crone, who's president of the Indiana Farm Bureau, and we're going to continue talking with Stephanie DeCamp, director of the Indiana State Fair Ag Ed. But we are joined now by a couple of old friends, John Perrine from the Indiana State Police and Mike Pruitt from the Wayne Township Fire Department. Welcome, both of you.
Thanks, John. Glad to be here.
Stephanie,
are important.
This is old friends. Well, one of them's got the power to arrest us, so you know we got to go along with that. So, I asked Stephanie this about how important the state fair is as an educational opportunity. I'm assuming that's part of the reason you guys are out here right now, given what you do. Could you talk about what it is you try to emphasize here? John, I'll start with you.
Yeah, you know, without a doubt, the Indiana State Fair represents every corner of the state of Indiana. People can come out here and learn about that you might not otherwise have an opportunity to travel to. And so it's really neat, and there's a lot of fun things to do for kids. And it's a good opportunity for us as the state police to display our best and to really interact with the people that come out here and kind of bridge that gap that sometimes there is between the police and the public and let them know that we're just people with a job. And our number one priority is to make sure everybody can enjoy the fair safely.
Mike, how about you? What do you try to drive home while you're
here? I've been here at this fairgrounds for over 30 years, so I was a 4-H'er showing livestock, so this is like my second home during the summertime. But, you know, reinforcing what John said is just, you know, we want everybody to have a good time. It's such a great state fair. I've been and traveled around a lot of state fairs around the Midwest, and Indiana has such a great state fair. But we want everybody to be safe when they come out here and plan appropriately before they arrive here at the fairgrounds so that that experience is a positive one for them.
So what are some of the things they could do to stay safe?
Well, you know, one thing that we deal with a lot here, and we're pretty good, I think we have 100% track record, is lost children, or as we call them, lost parents. But there's some things you can do.
Yeah, the kids always know where they are.
Of course.
Yeah.
There's some things you can do to help ensure that we're going to find your child quickly for you. And number one is, when you get here, take a photo of your child. That way, if you do lose sight and you find a guy like me and you say, this is what he looks like, and I say, what kind of shirt is he wearing? You don't have to think about it. You can look at that photo and you can give me an exact description of what clothes he's wearing. That'll help us find him a little faster. If it's one where it becomes an extended time where we can't find them, we can take that photo and send it out to all the police and firemen working. And so everybody now has a picture of that child, a real-time photo. We're not talking a couple days ago in a different outfit, mm-hmm. a real-time photo. And that would be key to finding a child safely. And Mike and I were talking about, even though it's not hot, talking about hydrating.
Absolutely. And hydration doesn't necessarily start when you get to the fair. We should start hydrating before we come. So making sure you either bring water or purchase water while you're at the state fair, stay hydrated. Make sure you put that sunscreen on. Make sure you wear a hat. Keep those little kids covered up as much as possible. But these are all little things that you can do to make that visit much more enjoyable for your family.
And lastly, we also want to encourage people to leave their valuables at home. If you're going to bring it to the fair and you're not going to carry it with you, don't leave it in your car. We try real hard to provide security for those parking lots, but sometimes people look for an opportunity. And if they walk by your car and they see something valuable, in a matter of seconds, they can break in and take that. So if you're not going to carry it into the fair with you, leave it at home. You're not going to need it here. So we would encourage people to do that.
So, Stephanie, while we're talking here about really what people should know, what they should learn out of this experience, what do you hope they gain out of coming out here? If you've just got a day, what are some of the things you hope they would do?
Well, we would always just tell them to learn something new, and no matter where they go, what building they go into, even if it is stopping by the state police information booth, you're going to learn something. So just try and capture that experience, because it is about showcasing Indiana and Indiana agriculture. And so try as much as you can, but we know that it's a big area to cover in one day, but just try and see and learn as much as you can, especially around the theme this year of the wonderful world of food.
How much is it, you know, because one of the big things, and I think this is one of the things that is most remarkable about fairs in general, state fairs in general, this one in particular, though, is that, you know, when the fair got started, Indiana was an agricultural state where probably two-thirds of the people who lived here were involved in farming or food production in one capacity or another. Now, like most of the country, most of the world, we're much more urban. People are more removed from that part of their lives. How has that changed the mission of the fair and changed the challenge of educating people about?
Right. With the average person being more than two generations removed from the farm, we do try to incorporate things like Pioneer Village, even the barn chats in the livestock barns, showing what is happening on those farms to prepare those animals and to bring those animals to show, but also the end product of the food that we eat.
And I think we've got to let John and Mike go back to work here. Real quickly, since you guys have become internet stars of the sort, is there going to be a video coming out of this that'll go viral?
I don't know about any viral videos, but we have been putting some stuff on Twitter that we've been here enjoying our time, hopefully with some safety messaging behind it. But sometimes we just like to have a good time, and we're just regular people as well.
I enjoy every minute of it, getting out doing some silly stuff with this guy. We're kind of brothers from another mother in many ways when it comes to this type of stuff, but ultimate mission just to get that message out to the general public in the simplest way we can, and sometimes humor is how we do that.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for stopping by today, and hope that every day that you are out here is as beautiful as this one. It's got to be a lot nicer to be walking around now rather than a driving rain or when it's 106 degrees. So,
yeah, thanks for having us, John.
Oh, certainly. Glad to have you. Anytime, guys. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. So, Stephanie, help me real quickly plot a day. For someone, let's say it's you mentioned that most people now are two generations removed. If they want to come and get a taste, not just of the fair, but also of what agriculture means to Indiana, what are some of the things they should do? Definitely for that first visit, they should think of doing.
For the first visit, they should definitely think about, if they have youth under 10. Getting them over to Little Hands on the Farm. That is that mock farm where the youth become farmers for the time that they're there, and they get to do different chores like that is seen throughout Indiana in ag production. Also to visit the Glass Barn. It's the clear look at the farming experience. The Indiana Soybean Alliance has done an amazing job bringing that to us here. You can go through a season of farming and learn about the different things that farmers go through. Also, our Global Kitchen, which is in the Harvest Pavilion, it is a great exhibit about food and culture and how things have evolved from transportation and selling crops. Also going through the Ag Hort building, where you can see the fresh produce and the Indiana Beekeepers Association with their beehive there. So those are just a few of the things that I would suggest to get a little taste of agriculture, but also the food. You can't turn down the food at the Indiana State Fair.
No, I've already mentioned the fact that there's a corn dog and some corn on the cob in my very near future, practically as soon as I get off the air. So let's go to the other end of the spectrum here and say this is someone who has been coming here for 4 years. What's a hidden gem? Something that very few people know about and that would be illuminating?
Well, the hidden gem would probably be some of those icon things that I said. The Global Kitchen is only here this year. We try to change that exhibit up, so that's something that they wouldn't see in any other fair that they've been to here at the Indiana State Fair. And again, those hidden treasures at Pioneer Village are amazing. If you've been coming for years, you're still going to see something new at Pioneer Village.
We're joined now by Michelle Plummer of the Dairy Association. Michelle, welcome to the program.
Hi there. How are you?
We're doing well. It's good to have you drop by and join the conversation. So I'm going to ask this question to both of you. What's your favorite thing about the fair? What is the one thing? I mean, I know it's not exactly a holiday for you guys because you're working and you're on the clock, but what is the thing you say, okay, every year before the fair is over, I have to do this? I'll start with you, Michelle.
Well, I'm kind of partial because I manage the dairy bar, so I think I have to have the perfect grilled cheese.
Okay.
But the other thing I have to do is have an elephant ear. That's a big day. All of my employees and I, we go get a big stack of elephant ears and ice cold milk, and we sit back for a few minutes and munch on that and enjoy the whole day.
I think I need to join there.
Yeah, you need to walk over. You need to walk over to where they're operating.
Yes, we in our group of coworkers, we have a food list, and so ours is to get through the food because year round out here, if anybody comes out, there's not a lot of food vending opportunities, and so we kind of take it all in 17 days. And so you do, if you like the corn dog, we haven't got over there yet, but the corn dog split is with macaroni and cheese. And it brings all of that together. And
we had the deep fried peanut butter and jelly last night for dinner. Oh, man, that warm peanut butter, it was luscious.
I'm sure cardiologists all over are cringing right now.
It's the fair. One time a year, why not?
You gotta do it. This is true. And if you have not figured this out, if you're listening, we are broadcasting live from the Indiana State Fair. We're just across the way from the Coliseum, over by some ping pong tables. Got some kids over here playing soccer, surrounded by hay bales. Nothing says Indiana more than that. There's some cornhole going on. I'm seeing people walking by with all sorts of things I would love to eat right now.
Lots of cow cups.
Yes, I love cow cups. And if you want to join the conversation today, we're not able to take phone calls because we are operating remote or emails, but you can join the conversation via social media. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can do what Jan has done. Actually, she found us on Facebook, but if you want to reach out to us via Twitter, you can find us at WFYI on Facebook. It is No Limits WFYI. Jan writes, how do we handle the moral dilemma of corn production for fuel when so many people are starving in the world? Either both of you are.
Well, the interesting thing is that the corn that's used for fuel is not the same sweet corn that's here in Indiana. So the sweet corn is only 2% of the crop. The other 98% of the crop is for biofuel, for diesel, and things like that. So Corn and Soy Association, they work diligently on that part. And then the producers of that gorgeous sweet corn, there's just 2% of them again, they are rocking it this year because every kernel that I've tasted is just delicious. So there is a balance. We just need to make sure that all of the listeners are really getting the right message, not maybe some skewed information or something like that. So this is the perfect opportunity to come out to the fair. And Stephanie's got so much great information educationally around the fair. It's awesome.
What is the biggest misperception about agriculture or food production right now? The thing that you really want people to understand is not the case.
Well, the biggest thing is that we try to say is for them to become educated and utilize the information put out by our Indiana associations, because they're the experts. We try to get all of our information from them or the Indiana State Department of Ag. So it's more so making sure that they have the facts and not using the first thing that pops up on the internet when you go. I'm a Google queen. I love to Google things, but we got to make sure that we know where our facts are coming from.
That slight rumbling you're hearing, by the way, if you're listening to us, is one of the products of being live. There was a breeze that picked up, and it's blowing across our microphones right now. And that's one of the things about being out here at the fair, is you really do feel like you are out in the middle of it. I see some folks coming over here and getting ready to play some ping pong close to us. We see the shuttle going by and everyone loaded up. And as I say, tons of people walking by the Coliseum, which is where we're broadcasting from, close to here, with all sorts of things that I really, really would like to eat right now. So tell me a little bit, Michelle, about what all you offer through the Dairy Association at the Dairy Bar.
The Dairy Bar is located right next to the administration building, and we offer literally all things dairy. So from something as simple as a cup of yogurt to our traditional wonderful buttery grilled cheese sandwiches, classic milkshakes, we have mozzarella sticks, we have hand-dipped ice cream. The nice thing about the Dairy Bar is that it's probably the best deal on Main Street. Our sandwiches are $3 a piece. Mm-hmm. We have a kids' meal that gives you a sandwich and a glass of milk and applesauce with a treat for the children for $4. But all the food is fresh. They're being made every single day right behind where the customers can look through the window and see the kids working. It's just tremendous. When you're producing somewhere around 4,000 to 5,000 sandwiches a day and close to 7,000 milkshakes a day, not only is it crazy busy, but it is really fun to watch those shake cups go out the window and everybody eating that and their smiles and their happiness of being at the fair and getting their food from the Dairy Bar.
So is it tempting to drink up the profits yourself, or is that, how many of those do you partake of yourself during the course of the day?
I'm pretty much a milk drinker, so okay. I will tell you that every day we have a glass of ice-cold milk, and I may have been the traditionalist here. I love a really great American grilled cheese sandwich, but this year our signature sandwich was produced by one of our dairy farmers from our Ultimate Grilled Cheese Sandwich contest last year, Andrew Keenert in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and he considered making something called a mousetrap, and it won, and it is...
What is a mousetrap? I'm sorry.
It is Havarti.
Amazing.
It's Havarti, okay. Cheddar, and Colby Jack on Texas toast, and it is the most gooey, yummy awesomeness, really, at the fair. We're blowing them out the door. It's great.
Okay, so we know you like the mousetrap, Stephanie. What is your favorite food to eat out here?
Well, I would have to say a good grilled cheese. You can't go wrong with that all-American kid sandwich. They do it the best. I can't make one at home, so it's like you wait all year for an amazing grilled cheese sandwich.
And you say that you do, what, 5,000 of the sandwiches during the course of a day and 7,000?
Yes.
How many people do you have working there?
We have 25 staff people, and then we have volunteer groups that come in every day, and there's 45 to 50 of them, and they all have designated jobs not only to serve the public but also to help prepare for the that day's business, and maybe we get a little bit of backup, but very rarely. We're always starting fresh every single day. So we have great organizations. Some of them have been with us for as long as 20 years. Some of them are just starting this year.
Is that something, Stephanie, that people just don't get about the fair, is how many people have to work to make this thing happen?
Yeah, there is a lot of behind-the-scenes work, and that's the most exciting thing that I think we need to start creating tours of behind the scenes at the fair, because going into the back of Michelle's house at the Dairy Barn is just amazing to see how it looks like a well-oiled machine, but it's a different volunteer group every day. So it is an amazing opportunity of how to see how the fair comes together.
If you are just joining us, we are broadcasting live from the great Indiana State Fair. We're just across the way from the Coliseum under a tent, over by some ping pong tables, watching some people play cornhole, got some kids playing soccer amidst hay bales here. Because we are broadcasting away from the studio, we're not able to take phone calls or emails, but you can join the conversation via social media. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. I've been talking with Michelle Plummer of the Dairy Association and Stephanie DeCamp, Director of Indiana State Fair Ag Ed. I'm going to be joined shortly by Cindy Hoy, Executive Director of the Indiana State Fair Commission. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please, stay with us.
No Limits is made possible on 90.1 WFYI by your membership and by Lake City Bank's Commercial Banking Group, offering business loans and deposits, treasury management, and merchant services solutions from businesses large and small, all delivered by local bankers. Details at lakecitybank.com/business. I'm Matt Pelzer. Coming up in 20 minutes, attention turned to North Korea this week with new economic sanctions and heated rhetoric from both sides. The latest at 2 o'clock on Here and Now.
Race is. Race is. Racism. We are all part of one race. It's called the human race. On the next Uncle Dan's Story Hour.
Why?
Why?
Why are we still talking about this? Join writer Dan Wakefield, host Cy Bennett from Keep Indianapolis Beautiful, and a panel of guests for some very powerful conversations. Monday night at 9 p.m. on 90.1 WFYI.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are broadcasting live from the Indiana State Fair. Today we're just across the way in a tent, across the way from the Coliseum, close to some people playing ping pong. See a couple out there doing so right now. We had some kids playing soccer among the hay bales here. And we've had people coming in and out to play cornhole and all of that. If you want to join the conversation, you can do so by social media. We're not taking calls or emails today. Best way to do it is on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. I am joined now by Cindy Hoy. She is Executive Director of the Indiana State Fair Commission. And Jim Walker of Big Car Collaborative. Jim provided all of the great stuff we've got out here, so we're grateful to have both of you here. It's good to have you on the show and out here at the great state fair.
It's nice to be here. And I love this new spot that Jim created. It's so interactive, and it's kind of chill, and it's just fun to be out here.
Yeah. What was your vision for it, Jim?
Well, I've been coming to the fair since I was a little kid. My mom and some relatives sold Tefal skillets in the merchants building. I wandered around the fair when I was 8 years old and younger. And I've always really loved it here, and I always come every year, and used to come here when I was in a different line of work doing journalism. Uh-huh. And the thing that you always want is some place to hang out with your family and sit down and relax and enjoy the food and interact. And, so our goal in working with the fair is to make a place that people want to stick around and enjoy, and also to have it be something that, you know, is free. So right. that's what we're providing thanks to the fair, and you know, we've got WGU as a supporter of the space, and it's great having WFYI and their two tents here where they're out present and supplying programming like this for people too.
Yeah, I should say long after we go off the air, the WFYI tent is going to be available. You're going to be able to stop by and say hi to our folks, learn a lot more about public broadcasting, what's coming up, and how you can get involved. Cindy, I cut you off.
I was just going to say, what was really fun is that my grandkids were just out here playing soccer. And then
So they were the ones kicking the ball around.
Well, not well, but they were trying. But the point is, like, this is it's a great space for little kids. And then we have
older fairgoers that have enjoyed being under the tent and grabbing something to eat. And then it's so fun to walk by and people are playing chess at the Indiana State Fair. Well, who would have thought that except for Jim Walker? I mean, he had this vision of how to make this fun for everyone and just kind of a little escape getaway place.
How much of your own experience here at the State Fair kind of informed what you thought would be useful? You know, because that normally, she's right, chess is not something that that is immediately intuitive.
I mean, people like to make their own choices, and that's a lot about what this space is. You can just come in here and you can choose to do nothing but just sit there and talk to your friend or read a book. But you can also choose to play soccer. You could choose to draw. We have the Wagon of Wonders over there. That's our interactive museum box. Mm-hmm. And you could make a postcard and mail it anywhere you want in the world for free. So it's just choices. And that's a universal thing for people. And that's what you're doing at the fair. Like, you have so many choices here. Like, so many choices of what to eat, what animals to go look at, what to learn about, just what rides to go on. So we wanted to just make it so this is a place where you have all your options, and you no one's trying to dictate what you do and how you do it, and make your own cornhole rules if you want, or soccer rules, and you know, I love that the soccer field has been really great, and there was a few days ago when a lot of the kids here who were showing animals were out, and that the bales were lined with boots because they all had their boots on. They couldn't play soccer in their boots, so they just took their boots off, and you had cowboy boots all running, and they're running around their socks.
But so isn't that just telling about this event? It is such a mix of rural and urban, which is why I think people cherish it, because no other place can you have that lovely and honest mix of the city and the farm and everybody enjoying it, right?
Well, that's Indiana. That's what Indiana is. It's that combination that makes it a great state.
So we haven't done this so far on the program. I was sort of saving this for you, but we probably ought to talk about how big a thing the fair is, how many people come here and all of that, because I think unless you've been out here, you cannot grasp the size and the scope of it.
Right. I think there are a lot of different patterns, and Jim was alluding to it, is that there's a lot of different traditions and patterns people have, whether they just come for the food or they come for the ride. But there's also all these incredible exhibits and times when people can get really immersed into something. So Pioneer Village, for example, that Purdue Ag alumni, that antique farm machinery, you can spend hours over there just kind of meandering through all the little nooks and crannies. And what I always encourage people to do, the best way to take in the Indiana State Fair is multiple times on a short amount of time. And so you say, okay, today I'm going to come for the livestock. I want to really see those draft horses and the pygmy goats. And then another time you might want to come back and take in the free stage that Chevrolet is sponsoring this year, and some wonderful entertainment that you can just enjoy at night. And maybe you want to take in the north side, which is very educational. Or, of course, you know, come for some of the events in the grandstand. So there's all sorts of different things that, you know, my recommendation to people is come multiple times and come from a short amount of time for those times.
When does the planning for this? I mean, have you pretty much got next year's State Fair locked down? How far ahead do you have to? Because this is huge. I mean, for a while, this becomes what the State Fairgrounds becomes the third or fourth largest city in the state.
Right. I can think of it that way as a city, right? So about 900,000 people typically will come to the fair. And, yes, we plan. Right now we find that Hoosiers love it when the fair is themed. And so we already have a conceptual idea for the theme next year and then 19 and 20. So we plan multiple years in advance. Every year you come back with a laundry list of things to improve and do differently. But each year we want to make it a little better, tweak it a little differently. For example, this space right here. Hopefully it comes back and maybe it's a little bit different. Maybe Jim's got some other ideas that he wants to bring to it. So it's what's wonderful about this fair. It keeps evolving and changing, and so it's something new and fresh for everybody to come back to.
So if you're just joining us, we are broadcasting live from the Indiana State Fair. We're just across from the Coliseum. Right next to some ping pong tables, I got to ask, Cindy, are these two your grandsons over there?
You know what? They are not. They were playing.
Because I noticed they were playing. They were playing a little while ago. If your grandchildren are around and they want to stop by and be on the radio, they're more than welcome.
Oh my gosh, how funny!
We would love to do that. What was your favorite thing, Jim, about the State Fair when you were a kid? What's the part that you sort of wish you could pass on?
You know, and I do. My kids come here with me and my wife all the time, and man, there's so many things about it. I think because being in the Merchants Building and all the different things in there and exploring, I think just exploring all the different buildings. Even now, I go in a building and I'm like, wow, this, like the where the cattle are, mm-hmm. that is such an amazing building. Mm-hmm. And the windows and how big it is, and, you know, it's just like a massive industrial building almost. And it's for the purpose of showing and having the cows in there. And I think that stuff is so impressive, and it was when I was a kid, and it continues to be today, just walking through here. And I have new favorite things, like I love this sky ride.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah, like somebody was just saying, was this always here?
I've heard that too. It's brand new. Yeah. But I think that that will be an element that will become part of a tradition, a family's tradition. Yeah. It's like, oh, we always see the world's largest boar, and we always ride the sky ride,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think it's interesting. So the history of this fair I love. So Jim's talking about the cattle barn. The cattle barn was built for cattle. I mean, 4.5 acres just for cattle. In today's world, we have to make that a multiple-use facility and turn that into a flower and patio show or the home show or that kind of thing. So these buildings that were built for a single purpose, we now have to look at them as how do they fit throughout the rest of the year, too.
That's a theme I talked about a bit with Stephanie DeCamp, who was on earlier in the show, about how the challenge of educating people about the fair has changed over time. You know, when the fair started, Indiana was, it still is an agricultural state, obviously, but 2/3 or more of the people who lived in the state earned their living from the land and as farmers or in some form of food production. Now it's maybe 1/3, maybe less of that. And she said, you know, most people in the state are 2 generations removed now from any sort of agricultural lifestyle. I would think with a cultural change and a demographic change that dramatic, sort of the way that you present the fair and how you try to teach people what Indiana and Indiana agriculture are all about has to have changed along the way too.
Well, it certainly has changed. I mean, it's back in the day, it was farmer to farmer comparing notes and talking about best practices. And today it's really about trying to interact with the consumer and really telling the consumer about where their food comes from. And that's our goal. But today, we have to sell it a little bit differently. So we encourage people to come in to have the deep-fried food or ride the rides or that kind of thing. But we want to peel them off and teach them a little something more about agriculture while they visit their fair. But let me go back to one other thing I think
Sure.
about tradition and history and so forth. I think what's really cool about today's world, we're so tied to technology. And see what you think about this, Jim. But we're so tied to technology, but this is one little getaway escape where you and your family can come and you're a little disconnected from it.
Sure.
And I think there is there's a lot of soul to the Indiana State Fair just because of that. And I think it'll be even more and more impactful as we go along.
I agree. It's like agrotourism where people go and stay at the farm and go help at the it's become a thing that isn't so prevalent, but it is still something that people are very interested in and find it important and want to be part of it. And it's not just as a novelty. It's just such a crucial part of our lives to be able to experience it.
Yeah.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Scott who says, someone tell Cindy Hoy, my dad's working his 50th state fair this year. Everyone should be impressed.
Tweet back and ask him where he's working, and I'd like to go shake his hand and tell him thank you.
Or take it one better, if he can get over here to the radio station, we'd love to have him on the air. Because that's a part of this discussion we've kind of alluded to. But the fair is a generational thing, too. I mean, when we talk about a tradition, there are, I know from having done this show out here before, families will come up, people will come up and tell you, you know, my great-grandfather.
Right.
Yeah, or my grandfather started bringing me here, my grandparents. We've been going ever since. The family, you know, some of them will say, we've got 70 years or whatever, and we've never missed a fair.
Well, there, I think it's a personal pride with people. There is, people have so much pride and ownership in this institution, and our job is just to preserve that pride and keep making those traditions, you know, continue those traditions and continue to make the event just very special. I mean, something that people will continue to bring generation to generation.
What are the, you know, the touchstones, the things? Obviously, the fair has had to evolve over the years.
Right.
But what are the things that you just absolutely could not dispense with, or people would be coming after you with pitchforks?
Well, they want their saltwater taffy, where they've always gotten their saltwater taffy. Okay, so,
saltwater taffy is the third rail. Okay.
No, it's funny. I mean, they're individual people have individual passion about certain things, and so we constantly have to do new things, but we're very careful about trying to make sure that we are not destroying that, like, that experience that they cherish so much. So, but it really is. So the core, the foundation, our base is agriculture and youth and education. Those are our three cornerstones. Those have to evolve and change as times evolve and change, but those will always be our foundation. Of course, we're always going to sprinkle. The most popular thing that people come to the fair for is food right now. So maybe 20 years from now, it may be something else. And whatever that something else is, we'll prop that up too and make it really special and fun and big.
What, you know, when we talk about those kinds of changes, what are the most difficult parts of pulling this together to execute?
Well, first of all, I would say, I would not say it's difficult. I would say it's always a challenge because you go around the fairgrounds and take, for example, the Indiana Arts Building. Incredible exhibitors that compete in photography and arts and crocheting and things like that. And so it is very centristic to those people. Then you'll go to the 4-H exhibits and very important for those. So each, I almost call them like little villages around this great big village of certain elements. So we want to make sure that we continue to support those. But, for example, Home and Family Arts, the Indiana Arts Building, maybe we need to make photography digital because now we're doing a lot more in digital photography. So we always have to look at what we have as a base and then continue to say, okay, how can we tweak that just a little bit?
So in terms of this, and I've asked everybody here, what do you consider kind of the hidden gem? I mean, there are certain things you say, everybody does talk about the food and all of that. What are the parts of the fair that you know, because the two of you know it so intimately, that you would really recommend to folks and say, you know, not as many people go here as ought to? Start with Jim, but then I want to hear Cindy.
Cindy was just talking about the Home and Family Arts Building, and one thing that's really funny with technology is if Facebook has those Facebook memories from previous years that come up on that day, you know? So when the fair is going, it keeps showing all these pictures on Facebook that I took of all the fair queens.
Right.
Like,
I
love that. Yeah. That's in the Home and Family Arts Building, and I see other people. But that's a really great place to explore, and it's kind of cool in there and quiet and nice. That's where we did Fluxus performances in 2011.
Oh,
I don't know if you remember that.
Yes.
And then also where the Purdue Extension is, that has all the different vegetables and things you can see.
Agcourt Building,
that competition. Mm-hmm. I love that too, and the pictures of different vegetables and fruits on plates. I think that's really great over there.
Hidden gem, Cindy.
DNR Fishing Pond. Oh,
yeah,
my
that's
gosh.
Awesome.
Got to take the kids to that. And then just walking in and looking at some of the natural resources from out in Indiana and the fish tanks, and then the fish outside and the little ponds. Again, kind of shaded, and it just feels really kind of cool. And then I don't know if a lot of people know that we have butterflies back over in there. And that's one of those, again, hidden treasures. But I think the north side has a lot of those little hidden treasures. You have to walk through it.
The live country music over there is fantastic.
The Master Gardeners with their demonstration garden, which a lot of people don't see it right
there.
Isn't that sweet? Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's a good place to get fish to eat right by that. I like that.
So real quickly, your guilty pleasure out here, the one that maybe you did when you were a child and still have a hankering to do, even though
I've got a new one. I had the cherry-filled elephant ear,
okay.
And that was It was good, but I felt guilty.
Okay, Cindy.
Oh, boy, you're going to make me do this?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Well, I've got to say that the milkshake, there's nothing like the Dairy Bar and the milkshake. I know you were just talking about it with Michelle, but it really is. It is just unbelievably perfect at your Indiana State Fair.
Absolutely.
And that will have to be the last word. We have been broadcasting live from the Indiana State Fair. I would like to thank all of my guests, both those we planned on and those who dropped by. That's the wonderful thing about doing a live radio show. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.